Hello and welcome to episode 30. My name is James O'Connor and today's special guest is Simon Madden. Now, Simon is an AFL legend. Guys, listen to this for a bio. Two premierships, three All-Australians, four Essendon best and fairest. He played 378 games, kicked 575 goals. Norm Smith medal in the 85 flag when they won. He captained the club for a couple of years. He was a part of the Essendon Football Club, mind you, which is the most successful club in the league, along with Carlton. Team of the century, and was rated the fifth best player for the club ever, full stop, all time. Now, we got to sit down over a coffee and really delve into some awesome stuff, some awesome strategies, some awesome advice and tips on how he created the success he had and sustained it for such a long period. There's 19 seasons, I think, he played for the Bombers there. And we really go into that and how people out there listening, yourself right now, whether you're in business or whether you're an athlete yourself or footballer, you can really grab hold of a few of these things that Simon did and really apply to yourself and really take your game to the next level, because Simon is an absolute legend of AFL. He's still today, he's on the board of the Essendon Football Club. He also runs his own company in doing leadership and high-performing teams work. So he's absolute super, and this whole interview is really incredible and something you're really going to have to listen to every second of the way, because he has so much great advice to pass on to all of us to help us take our game to the next level. So definitely, folks, if you got some mates out there or family, I know, who will love AFL or just love sport or even just really into business as well, Simon is so interesting. Make sure you tap him on the shoulder and say, get on board with this episode with Simon. Really lucky to have him. And guys, really appreciate everyone out there too who shares this, lets people know about Simon on this episode. It's really for you guys to really pass on and really help each other, you know, take it up to a new level to get better results and really overall improve your game. So super stoked. So really enjoy this one. Episode 30, which is a real celebration. So I'm stoked to have Simon as episode 30. And again, thank you to all my listeners to listening week in, week out to each incredible guest we've had. And I really want to thank you to all the past guests, the 30 or so, who have been on the show and really passed on their wisdom to you guys. So thanks to those, and really stoked for this episode. So enjoy episode 30 of the JockX podcast with myself, James O'Connor, and AFL legend Simon Madden.
Yeah, grew up in Airport West. 1 year in Brunswick, I can't remember, as a little fella with my grandmother's house. And then mum and dad moved to Airport West. Dad was a ex-serviceman, so I think he got a little bit of assistance to land in the great and wonderful world of Airport West. As I've said to people, they've had Broadmeadows and Caroline Springs, but this bloke bought a big piece of land west of the Essendon Airport and very creatively called it Airport West, you know. Yeah. And we grew up there. It was real working class. Went to Catholic Primary School, St Bernard's. Couldn't play footy as a kid, but one or two cools of my mates did. You know, the last one picked in the footy team. But all my mates played footy, and so went through that and started to get good about 10, 11, started to understand it. My dad died at 13, which was, you know, it was always it's hard on the family, but he had a fantastic mum. She brought up three big boys. Went to St Bernard Secondary School, year 11. You know, it's a funny thing, in year 11 started playing with Essendon. So you play for school on Wednesday and Essendon on Saturday. Des Tubman was my first coach. Yeah, and so that all goes very quickly, and all of a sudden, 9 years later, you finish, and you know, married, and four kids, and yep. And now they've got four adults, they're all grown up, and so yeah, fairly apart from league football, I suppose, a fairly nobody's normal, but a fairly normal upbringing, I would imagine. Huh?
Yeah, well, obviously, with your league football, 19 seasons with the Bombers, a couple of premierships, four best,
but who's counting? Yeah.
Let's talk about one interesting we just touched on before, about you getting into the league.
Yeah.
Obviously, coming in at 15, 16 years old, that doesn't happen now, obviously.
No, look, it's very, and it's really interesting, because it was funny when Tim Watson came along and he played his first game about 15 and 10 months, and I'm 19 years old and I'm the old fella trying to give him some advice, it's hilarious. The fact is that if you were there was no drafting, it was zones. There was no cap on a list, so we could have, you know, I can remember pre-season the first couple of years, we could actually put together three practice matches, an under 19, a seconds and a seniors intra-club, inside club practice match, and provide both sides. So you could have 120 blokes running around hoping to get a chance to play at Essendon. And then as the game evolved, it became more and more professional, and I finished in 92, so it wasn't quite fully professional there, but it was putting pressure on anybody had a daytime job, was starting to put pressure on it. Yep. And people were starting to think about how they arrange footy around their life and how they arrange life around footy. And that's when I started, we had a couple of kids. So I was actually, I shared a teaching job with my wife for a year. And so we did half for one term. And then I think in the footy season, I did 4 days at home. And it was just to try and fit it all in, because it was coming, your family and work and footy was just becoming it was all running into each other. So for, that was for a little time did that. Yeah. You worked out ways and means of fitting it all together. So it's it was good. It was a good time. Great era for us.
Yeah, exactly right. And obviously coming into the 80s, obviously when Kevin took over, you guys had a hugely successful period through there. And obviously with, you know, Colin Mendes himself in the 85 going off Smith medal.
Yeah.
Talk to us about those, you know, few years there.
Look, it was really interesting because, you know, I'd had three coaches beforehand and all been very good. Des Tudenham, Barry Davis, Bill Stevens, Barry Davis. Very good coaches in their own way. But I think Sheeds came along and really was the first full-time coach. He'd been a full-time skills coach at Richmond, but he was the first full-time coach. And he was, I mean, he was a bit raw, of course, because he, you know, he'd never been senior coach before, but he was a driven man about success and wanted his team to be as driven about success. And he probably taught us a whole lot of, and even some of the little things, like, you know, we had to try back then, you have to train with your jumpers tucked in and your socks pulled up. It had to be Essendon gear and it couldn't be anything else. And you had to look like a football team, you know, before you got us all a football. We had to do so much skills training. But he just pushed the envelope, as the saying goes, to be fully professional. So, he was in lots of ways a visionary, because he was getting people, you know, everybody was, but he's getting people from interstate, people from other clubs. He was trying to put a premiership side together, which indeed he did. And I think in some ways the measurement of how good the 84-85 side was is the fact that you look at our opposition. And so Hawthorn wins 83,
yep.
Loses 84-85 to us,
yep.
Wins 86.
Plays
in 87, then wins 88-89, and then wins 91. I lose counts, but for us to actually interrupt that flow of that team for that period just sort of probably shows how good our side was. So, and it's really because, say Essendon at the moment, most players haven't played in a winning final, and we struggle to get a winning final. But I think when you win a final, everybody can talk about it, but you win a final, everybody's going to go, this is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand this now. I want more of this.
Yeah.
And so there's a real strong motivation about success once you've tasted it.
Yes.
And so, we got it, and we kept together for a while. And, you know, it's one thing to be successful. It's another thing to stay successful. So we'd won, you know, 84-85, and people are talking about how good 86 was going to be. And, of course, Tony Antrobus had broke his arm just playing basketball on our end of season trip. Nothing untoward. He just playing basketball, fell over and broke his arm. Tim Watson did his ankle, I think, pre-season. Anthony Denaher was injured. And all of a sudden, all this things that had worked and come together started to fall apart a little bit. So it's very, very hard to keep that up. But Essendon, you know, of course, Essendon, and then we got into the 90 grand final, unfortunately got beat, and then 93 we were able to win again, which I'd retired by then, which is probably a good thing. So there is, that being able to stay up there is very hard. So it's, you know, that concept of sustained success While a lot of people know how to get successful, that sustained success is very hard, and a lot of people don't understand that.
So if you had to say three things that you got, that Essendon and yourself did back in the mid-80s, that made you sustain that success, you actually achieved it, back-to-back flags, playing three in a row, what were they?
I think it's real, it's said by everybody, but it's really simple. Hard work.
Yep.
I've always said, if you don't understand the struggle, you never understand the success. And a lot of people aspire to be successful, but aren't prepared to put the hard work in. That's not just blind hard work, that's got to be smart hard work.
Yes.
I was reading an article this morning in the paper about athletes who can train too hard. And, you know, overtraining is just as bad as undertraining.
Absolutely.
So being smart about your hard work and understanding how you have a rest at the right time, and that's where good coaching comes into it.
Yes.
But it's basically hard work. I think the simple review and analysis, and I do a lot of work with business we can talk about later, but a lot of business doesn't do the review and analysis to the extent that, say, a sports team does.
Yeah, exactly.
And like on a Monday morning in business, it's Monday morning, or say, virtually Monday even now, after a weekend game, the first thing a sports team does is review and analyse what they did right, what they did wrong, what can they improve. In business, the first thing you do on Monday morning is get up and go into business.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to do it every Monday morning, but you have to build in a review and analysis process.
Yeah.
And this is an honest, open review, and it's not a positive or negative, it's just, you know, don't be hard on yourself, that's your boss's job. Don't be soft on yourself. There's an auntie or an uncle who'll, you know, pat you on the back and say, all right, just be honest with yourself. And if you're honest with yourself, you can actually analyse what you really need to do. So we're really, really big on that. And I think the concept of interdependent, it's really interesting. We're brought up to be independent, you know, people, which is, you know, you got to look after yourself. But the whole world works on interdependence.
Yeah.
And when a team understands that, you know, especially a team sport, you know, individual sports are a little bit different, but they still have people around them. But when you interdepend on everybody else and you understand that and you work together, good things can come out of that. I think those are the things that we really, really, really developed in our time in that mid-80s.
Yeah, and I guess even if you look to today, obviously we've just seen a three-peat
with Hawthorn.
Obviously they've got, you know, those sort of similar principles across their team. What else do you reckon has separated them in today's day and age to, you know, do it three in a row, which really...
I reckon it's a really good point, because last time was Brisbane, and Brisbane were very good in the early 90s. If you get a good side, like for us 84-85, there was only four changes. Back when there was only 20 blokes, two on the bench, there's only four changes between A and B, 84-85. That's very, very hard to do. But if you have a very clear vision of what you want to do, you have really, really good processes, which they have. And this is the really thing for a successful side, and this is both in business and in sport and in life in general. When the group holds each other accountable to the level they want, that's really, really powerful.
So when
it's not just the telling you what to do, but when your teammates are saying, hang on, we've agreed to this level of performance, and they can honestly, not harshly or softly, just say, James, you know, you're not up to the level. What's going wrong?
Yes.
We're holding each other accountable. That is powerful. And I would say, if you look at Hawthorn, they've got a lot of good leaders within the group, but I think the whole organisation is such that they hold each other accountable to the level they want. You know? And I think the more and more I analyse it, the more and more I see is that if you've got a good leader with good vision, and that's really important, that a good leader has to give you the real why. Especially in a contact sport, if I put my head over the ball and get it kicked off, you know, metaphorically speaking, but you know, and then I have to do that again, I'm not doing that for the money. After all, the money's not a motivator.
Right.
But if the leader can say, well, you know, if you ask the question why, and he gives you a really good answer, I have, you know, four adult children, I see the way they connect with the world and how their friends connect with the world. In my time, when the coach said do this and you went why, you probably didn't even ask why, but if you said why, he said because I say so. You ask young people now and they say do this and you go because I say so, after they've said why, because I say, they'll go well, and not harshly, they'll just say well I won't because I say so. because we're on equal ground. But if you say to a younger person, and for me, a younger person is anybody under 50, of course, but if you say, do this, and they go, why? And you say, well, for you this, for me this, for the organisation this, and the greater good, and they agree, they'll do it better. But they won't do it blindly. So you give them a really good why, and this is in sports teams, so you give them a really good why and what on why they have to do this, and they agree, they'll do it better. So that's the lead. The leader, one point of a leader is to be the visionary and to give them, but to give them a really good connection to that vision, to that goal, to what, you know, what they're trying to attain, whether that's a long-term goal for a business or a short-term goal, or for a team, you know, the premiership or the finals or the week-to-week win. You give them a really good why, and then they'll connect with it. And if they can connect with that, then everything they do is connected to that.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that, then everybody just does things in an organisation or a group.
Yeah.
They do things, but there's no real motivating power to get them to connect with the big picture.
And if you,
but everything's got to be aligned. It's all got to be aligned. So, because in the end, if somebody says, well, why am I doing this? And he can say, well, you're doing this because of this, which leads us to a premiership. Oh, okay. I understand that. So it's not this blind following because a coach says, it's because he's given me a vision that I can connect to and I want to be there and I want to be part of it. And that's more and more important. And blame people like me because we've educated our kids. And educated people will question. And a lot of people, I'm 57 years young, but a lot of people in my era come from the old school of, I'll tell you what to do. And that doesn't work anymore. Years and years ago it would have, but now people ask questions. And if you questions elicit answers, and if you can't give an answer, then you're not connecting. Now, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the right answer all the time. It'd be great if you could, but if you're trying to give them the right answer, and if you've done your research and done your homework and understand how to connect with them, then you can get them to perform really, really well. And most people don't know how to be great. They're not taught how to be great. They're not shown how to be great. They can work on being good, but they're very easy to be mediocre. And that's the way the world is. And that's not right or wrong. That's just the way the world is. But, and so in sport, and it, you know, you can read it all the time. Lots of people have skills. Lots of people have ability. But the hard work, the consistency, the drive, all those things that need somebody to help you along with, and not always, some people are, you know, very driven, but those things are the things that separate the average from the good and the good from the great. It goes back to that hard work and a clear vision and the interdependence of the two.
I guess with that change in from the young people today, really, you know, questioning, asking why and so forth, when do you think that sort of change come about? Was that sort of over the last 10 years, you think, or last...
I think it's been a slow progression. I look in the workplace, and I would say my... the way the world's changed, and you know, we haven't got time to analyse it at all that level, but the way the world's changed, and say in the workplace, my grandfather was very simple. Say my grandfather, all he wanted was just to get money to provide for the family. So he didn't expect anything other than that. Then my father probably started to think about a question about, in this time period, about, well, you know, what am I actually getting out of work? Then in my time of work, I probably started to ask for it. And now, fourth generation, like, people are starting to demand it. You know, why should I work for you? What does this job do for me? And it's a two-way street. You know, what do I do for this job, but what does this job do for me? And and young people, anybody in primary school now, some research says that they'll have 8 careers. Not 8 jobs, 8 careers. So what does that mean? So how do you connect with a person so they want to be, you know, in work? You know, the old... employer of choice, you know, employer of choice is a fancy term that's bandied around. But how do you connect with the person that they really want to be there? And then if you again, it's the motivation. Most people or most companies don't understand organisations, don't understand how to utilise their people the best. And so they're only getting X amount of, you know, this productivity gains people talk about. You get them motivated and connected to the big picture, and there's a whole lot of things along the way to do that. You get them connected to that, and they'll do really, really well. And that's what's all about in a high level of sport, is the same thing. And that's the analogy from sport that can be associated back to the workplace and the workforce, that how you get them, how you train them, how you connect with them, how you motivate them, how you show them, how you lead them to this end goal. It's very relative between sport and business or organisations.
Going back to the Hawthorn 3-point, obviously the chance to go 4 in a row.
That's going to be very hard.
If you had to give them, yeah, exactly right. If you had to give them 2 or 3 bits of advice on doing the 4th one, obviously you guys were chasing the 3rd one at the time. What would you say would be the key things that they need to think about over this pre-season, going into the new season to continue that?
Yeah, that's
unbelievable high level.
I think it's a really interesting one because continuing to be successful is harder than being successful, right? So gaining success is one thing, continuing success is another. They've actually got to work harder, and they've got to work smarter, because as soon as you are in that position, you become the measuring point. So even if a team's lowly on the ladder and doesn't have many wins, if they beat Hawthorn, this season looks really good. And the supporters and the players and the coaches and the fans, that's a feather in their cap. So you've got to look at it's the analysis. What have we done well? So you've got to look at what you're doing well, because once you analyse that, a lot of people forget this. They keep looking at what are we doing wrong? What are you doing right? And if you can actually identify it, then you can repeat it. It's repeatable.
Yeah.
So you've got to keep repeating what you're doing right. And it's the old stop, start, keep change process.
Yep.
Yeah. What have we got to stop doing? What have we got to start doing? What have we got to keep doing? And that's the really, what are we doing? What have we got to keep doing? And what do we have to change?
Yeah.
And again, being really honest about that. So, and that'll mean that, you know, in the industry it's in, that loyalty is a really funny thing in saying AFL footy. And I learned along the way that loyalty is important. But what you do is a season finishes, these blokes come in, these blokes go out, we get a whole new group. Then we're loyal for that year.
Yeah.
And we're really, really strong and loyal. Then it's season finishes and you go, well, this bloke's going to retire.
Yeah.
This new bloke's come in. This bloke wants another chance elsewhere because he didn't get into the finals, etc. Yeah. So then the group changes. And then that group, you say, okay, we're all together now. For the next 12 months, we're as loyal as hell. So so they've got to go through, as we are, you know, as we're taping this, we're in the trade period.
Yep.
They've got to go through that. Let's organise our group, and finally when we get our group together, these are the things that we did last year, the year before, and the year before that have got us where we are. But again, you've got to say, well, okay, what extra bit do we have to do? And it doesn't have to be done this. I mean, you have to work hard, as I said, but it's got to be smart work, working hard. What do we have to tweak a little bit to get better? Now, it hasn't. I think you have to go back to Melbourne and Collingwood. Years and years ago, I've done 4 in a row. And I remember in our time, I said, oh, yes, you'll get 3 in a row unless things get in the way, injuries, changes, etc. But they have a process. They have a process and a vision that's been really, really strong. And so you'd have to say they're a chance again.
Yeah.
But again, as I said, they become the measuring stick. So everybody wants to beat them.
Exactly
everybody
right.
wants
yeah.
to beat them.
and your old mob got them Elvis early in the year.
Yeah,
Which was a great win, by
the it was a great win. Unfortunately, the form didn't continue for the rest of the year. But in that instance, there's a whole lot of other areas that interplayed into that. But that was, and especially early in the season when you're fresh.
Yes.
In the middle of the season, it gets harder when everybody's tired. But we were fresh and said, and you know, that was the mindset.
Yes.
Hey, here's the dual premiership, and here's our chance.
Yep.
And with a long-term rivalry, a really good, I'd say healthy, some people, I'd say healthy rivalry between the two clubs. I think it's always a great game between Essendon and Hawthorn. So, I think that was, maybe we got them at the right time.
Absolutely. One of the guys I really look up to in the States is John Maxwell. He's one of the best leadership gurus going around the world. I think he's rated number one in the world and so forth. He has this saying that he doesn't always have to be at 100%. Like, you know, he has to pick and choose his times when he's at 100%.
Yeah.
So sometimes he can switch off. With yourself, we'll go back to your football career. What are some of the things you did on game day? Well, let's go back to the grand final. What were you doing on game day to really get yourself?
It's an interesting one because it varies. There's no right answer for anybody, because some people get really caught up in the the preparation process. So if something goes wrong, that actually messes up the approach to the game, which is, I think, silly. It's good to have processes, but if it goes wrong, that's happened, you know, this, if it happens in the same our sport, if that, something goes wrong in the game, it goes wrong, you just deal with it. I always use the example of Terry Denner, who was a great captain. You know, I say to people, he wasn't a good captain, he wasn't a great captain, he was a sensational captain. Because he could say, do as I say and do as I do. Because he was one of the best trainers. He was the only, sure, he was the only bloke that Kevin Sheedy ever said to us, do I have to fine him to keep him off the training track? Because he'd say, oh, mate, the doc said you need a rest. And Terry go, no, she's right, mate, I'm not, I'll go and train. But I remember one state game, and he had a cleaning business, or he still has, but he had it back then. And something went wrong. It was a Saturday afternoon. We're playing at Waverley when it was a big stadium. And he had to get up early in the morning and finish off someone's job. He didn't turn up. So he's up at 5 o'clock doing the training. Doing the cleaning. Then he had to get to the game out at Waverley. And he got on the freeway. And it was, there's a great big, a pile up of cars. And he couldn't. So he reversed back up the exit lane about 300 metres to go out another exit. And he got to the game we're playing at 2. He probably got to the ground about 20 to 2. Now, that would mess up a lot of people's preparation.
Yep.
And he had, oh, she'll be right, mate. And he was second best in the ground.
Yeah, wow.
And so you've got to understand that, yes, what's best preparation for your optimal performance? Yes. But in a game, things go wrong.
Yes.
So how do you handle that? Do you become the arousal? Have you become too aroused and not aroused enough to perform? This is what you'd like to do, but doesn't necessarily you're going to actually have it, because that can, you know, in a game you say, I want to do this, and you've got a plan, but the opposition are going, well, we want to do this, and it's against your plan.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to hopefully look at what the best preparation is, but understand if that doesn't work, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because you've done so much preparation beforehand. So for me, it was a case I used to I played a lot of years, so we used to go through steak and eggs was the best thing to do on a Saturday morning. Then it wasn't. Then it was muffins at 10 o'clock. Then it wasn't. Then it was sandwich, you know, all this preparation. But for me, I just like to get there plenty of time beforehand. You like to get back then, there was a game beforehand, so you like to watch a little bit of that, see how the ground was, how the wind was, you know, how the rain was, how the bounce of the ball was, type thing. Do your normal preparation that. It's, you know, sort of individual stuff, and then there's group stuff. You do that. I used to do a bit of boxing.
Yep.
Some people say it never helped me at all. It was terrible, but it's really good warm up without using, you know, really good for your heart and lungs without using your legs too much.
Yep.
So it's a really good do that. Things like now blokes are on the caffeine tablets. Funny about after a while, I remember it was one really really cold day out at Waverley or Narrabin or somewhere, and one of the trainers had a coffee at half time. I said, oh, can I have some of that? So Lake McCrea was having a coffee at half time, and it was just a habit you got into. Now, if I didn't get my cup of coffee, it didn't matter, but it was just that comfort thing.
Most games you'd have a coffee at half time.
And it was funny because it had to be, it was like, I would have made a good private detective. It had to be instant coffee in a polystyrene mug, you know. Any other, now I couldn't do that.
It has to be a coffee.
But it was, it's working out, and a lot of times it's what you're doing is actually helping you prepare mentally for it. Yogi Bayer, who passed away this year, a great baseball and baseball commentator. He's always got this funny comment, but you understand what he's trying to say. He said 90% of this game is half mental. You know, and I think I knew what he's trying to say, but it is how much the mind, and this is a whole lot of other areas to talk, how much the mind drives the body, and if the body's prepared, then the mind can be prepared as well. It's just getting yourself into that optimal range of performance, and there's a whole, you know. Somebody punches you early in a game, not that it happened now, but in the back, you go, right, okay, what does that mean? You know, so am I going to fight him, or am I going to show him that he can't do that again? You know, a whole range of things. Or if you don't get a kick, you know, little things like if I hadn't touched the ball for a while, I would, and it's again harder to do now, but at a stoppage, I'd pick the ball up, touch and go, yeah, that sort of feels like, and hand it back to the ref and go, all right, okay, so there's just little things you work on that can help you get to where you want to be, and that varies for everybody, and it does, you know, there's no absolute given one, but there's little things that can help along the way that get you to the right state of mind for optimal performance.
Obviously now you're really focusing on obviously leadership, consulting, and working with different corporates and sports as well. What are sort of key things you think to produce great leaders?
I think I said before is it, it, the, having a clear vision of your target or your goal, or having a clear vision, because it's you, look, you give somebody a pay rise, and that's motivation for one pay.
Yeah.
Then that's what they're worth. Mm. But after a hard day at work, a hard week at work, and they're just before they go home, you say to them, look, James, here's two gold passes, take your partner out, you've been very good to us.
Yes.
Wow, hang on. I'm valued, this good leader's, I'm valued for who I am, not just what I do.
Yes, yes.
Right, so making sure people understand their value. Really, and this the other part is the right concern for results and the right concern for people. Right now, and I best way to explain that is, if you train for the SAS, there's lots of people try for it. In the end, they don't actually care about the person. And it's not right or wrong. They run everybody into the ground. Say 100 blokes try out for the SAS. They only want results.
Yep.
So in the end, more than 80, probably 90 drop out because they can't get the results that they want.
Yeah.
So in that instance, that's totally about the results they want.
Yeah.
At the other end, concern for the people. So you go to, say, a kindergarten teacher gives the kids finger painting. They don't care what the finger painting looks like. Mm. They want the person to have a really good experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's one extreme and the other extreme.
Yeah.
A really good leader in the modern world is about concern for results, but at the same time, concern for people.
Yeah.
And so by that, there's a whole lot of things, meaning how do I, you know, if I've got concern for the people, if they're valued for who they are and what they do, and they know that, I can push them a little bit harder, I can get the best out of them. So then I can get really good results. And I measure results, and we talk about results, but not in isolation from the people.
Yes.
And so more and more it's about those two. Now, that's not easy to get, but, having that continually in your mind about concern for people, concern for that, having the vision. And one of the things you've got to say about Kevin Sheedy was about being positive. And even, like, we could get, I can remember one game we got beaten by Sydney by 30 goals, I think, but he could still say, yeah, but did you see the bloke on the wing? We found a player, developed player. And there's a whole movement now in positive psychology, and people think positive psychology is a little bit about, I rub you on the shoulder, you'll be all right, really nice. In actual fact, it's not. It's about looking at strengths and understanding what people's strengths are and taking a positive approach to that, then looking at where failings are and weaknesses are and having a positive approach to that.
Yeah.
So it's not hiding anything. Instead of putting people down, you say, okay, your kicking's good, your handball's great, your marking's not up to scratch, what are we going to do about it? So there's a positive. So there's an understanding what the failing is, but it's not putting people in. So okay, what can we do to improve that, to bring that up? And I think you get a leader who does that, who has that clear vision and gets everybody connected to it, has that even balance between outcomes and people, and has that continual positive. Yes, we can do better. Yes, we can do better. That's for starters.
Yeah.
I mean, I could give you a whole lot of other time about it, but that's for starters.
Who do you see, like, if you had to sort of pinpoint some individuals across the globe who sort of really do this day in, day out,
I think Richard Branson, you've got to give a pat on the back. Now, I don't know him personally. I know some people who do.
Yep.
But he's always been positive about whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
He's always stretching the limits, and that's one of the other things, is pushing the envelope, pushing the limits. He's very good at that, but he's always really positive about it. Historically, I was always interested in Martin Luther King, because he didn't have a plan; he had a vision. Simon Sinek, there's a bloke called Simon Sinek who talks about the why.
Great book.
I find that fascinating, because I see that in sport about having the why. And as he says about Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King didn't say, "I have a plan." He said, "I have a dream." So he's giving people this connection. So people like that who are visionary. There's probably a whole lot of other lists, but at this moment in time, those two stand out.
And I guess playing you through football career even today, who are the sort of mentors you had in your? Obviously, yeah. Kevin Sheedy was one, but yeah. Who else did you
well,
have? That you
well,
sort
I,
of...
I think because my father died early, I think my mother knew nothing about football. I kept saying at the end, she passed away a number of years ago, but she said she couldn't tell one end of a football from the other, which you know. But she was, and her sons could do no wrong. But she was pretty straightforward and honest, and really being positive about that. And like, even my dad, when I was a kid, and a lot of parents are good at this, is that They don't judge their kids when they play sport. They just, you know, my parents just involved. They'd take you there. They'd, you know, I can remember we played in some footy grounds where they're so muddy that we'd come home in the back of someone's ute, which you couldn't do now, and we'd be outside and she wouldn't let us in the house until she hosed us down. That's how much mud there was. Then you'd go into the shower and clean off and get changed. And they're all positive about that. There's always that positive. I think all my coaches, I think Sheed was great, but all the coaches I had, they were mentors in some way. They showed you how to improve. And I think it's always good to have friends who know you for who you are, not just what you do. Yeah. And so you measure just for who you are, and so you can be yourself in with them rather than try, you know, especially in Melbourne as a footballer that you're seen in a certain light, you know, rightly or wrong. That's not right or wrong. It's just the way it is. But if you've got friends who you can spend time with, and they more worried about who you are than you being a footballer, that's really really important. Because then you can get a clearer picture of the real world, rather than the bubble world of football.
And you always hear, whether it be even celebrity actors to, obviously, level sports stars, talk about having those people to keep them, grounded.
Keep grounded.
Otherwise, you get the hype factor around you 24/7.
Yeah,
that's spiral a bit.
Well, and when you, what does someone say? When you start talking about yourself in the third person, like you're somebody else, that's when you got to worry.
You know you're in trouble.
So they're very good on, the friends are very good on keeping you grounded. And I think that's really, really important because, people said to me I was a good footballer. That doesn't make me any better or worse than anybody else. It just makes me a good footballer. Yeah. In fact, I'm not a good footballer anymore. I'm too old. But that perspective, I'm very big on getting a proper perspective, not a weighted perspective on where you fit in.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, for sure. What sort of, advice you'd have for sort of young footballers coming through the scene now too, and have sort of leadership aspirations as well? I guess through from sort of 15, 18, what sort of things would you sort of recommend they sort of start to look into their own football development and into their own development as leaders going into AFL ranks?
Yeah, that's a good point. I would, it's an interesting one. Be kind to everybody on the way up because you'll meet them on the way down. I got told that really. I think I got told it, but I learned it really, really early. My first game, first game 16, is on TV, and then next game you're back in the twos. So went up and down very quickly and learnt that. I think, and this is for a whole lot of people. You got to take your job seriously. Don't take yourself too seriously. The reality is that if you, not that you want this to happen, but if you die tomorrow, they'll replace you.
Yeah.
And if they don't replace you, did they really need you in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've got to have that perspective. And I think I learned from a whole lot of people in success, really good successful people in a whole lot of areas, not just in sport, are respectful to people around them.
Yeah.
And so they take their job seriously, but themselves seriously, and there's respect for a whole lot of people around them. So everybody's important in their own job and in their own place. You talk to sport, say to footballers, you'll find that they develop friendships with a lot of the, say, training staff because they're there longer than lots of players. Players come and go, yet there's people still, trainers at Essendon, who I would see and say hello to with friends, who were there when I was playing.
Yeah,
and so they actually develop a stable long-term relationship.
Yes.
So if you don't have respect for them, well, you don't develop those friendships. I think that's really important. It is about, it's all about balance, especially young people between 15 and 18. It's about hard work, but it's about perspective. And so, and you say people doing VCE, it's not all about study 100% of the time. There's a whole lot of research to show that, when you study really hard, and then you go and socialise, so you keep it balanced, and you get good sleep, and you good diet, and you don't drink too much. Well, I know people say they don't, but don't drink too much. All these things, it's about balance, having good relationships. All these things, when you've got that balance right, then when you train, you do it really, really well.
Yeah.
And then when you rest, you do it really, really well. And when you socialise, it's really, really well. And so this concept of what happiness is not about necessarily one thing in anybody's life. It's about a whole lot of things in it. And so in that aspirational view, it's really important that you get that balance right. And that's where you've got to have, people who are honest with you. They're not patting you on the back. Always worried about somebody who just kept patting you on the back all the time. Yeah. And always worried about somebody who wouldn't give you a good word. because you're good, you know, you're good close people will tell you when you're doing well and they'll tell you when you're not.
Yeah.
So you get a good perspective of it.
Yes.
So I think for anybody, you know, coming through the ranks in any sport or in any any aspirational area they're in, it's still hard work, but it's balance and perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Coming towards the end of the interview now, a couple of final questions. If you could give the listeners just three pieces of advice, they could take away nothing else but three pieces of advice that's going to help them take their game to the next level, whether it be in sport or business, what would that be?
Well, I think I've couple of, you know, done a couple of things with the Show Respect Tour. I think I've worked in business. I think you work with people who somebody asked me ages about, you know, you talk about what are your motivations you know, what drives you in business or sport, and how do you make relationships with people? I think it's very important. One rule for me is don't lie to me, don't stuff me around. But I use harsh words and stuff. But I can reckon I can deal with anything else.
Yes.
But if you lie to me or stuff me around, that gets in the way of what I want to do.
Yes.
And so I don't necessarily have time to. Now, that means, you know, I've said show respect to you, you've got to show respect to me. So it's really important that don't lie to people, because then you don't have to have a memory. Because people will lie, go, well, I've told him this and I've told her that and I've done this. Just, I know sometimes you've got to do white lies to protect people's integrity, et cetera, whatever. But, you know, realistically, just being straightforward and honest is really important.
Yeah.
I have this big overarching view of life is, and some people say it's pessimistic, I think it's realistic. I said, life is short and then you die, right? Even if you live to be 100, your life's not in a blink in the history of the world. So what does that mean? So are you going to spend that very short life being negative, being self-absorbed, being angry, or are you going to say, well, I'm on this earth for X amount of time. Why don't I have a really good time with what I do? Whatever I do, why don't I try and do it the best I can? And the other thing, look, that's just, you know, you're on it for a short time. Make the most of it, whatever that means for you. And I'm not big on telling people how to run their life, but I'm happy to impart some philosophy that might help them. Look, really important is really important is about never lose your sense of humour. I remember just, because life is serious and funny at the same time. And I think that, you know, when my father died, we were in the mourning car and going to the cemetery, and my dad worked in the car industry and had terrible trouble with cars. And we're going to the cemetery and the car broke down, the mourning car broke down. And I was 13, I felt like saying, oh, isn't this typical of Dad? This just is perfect for Dad. Go, but you couldn't. You know, as a kid, you couldn't be funny at a funeral.
Yeah.
But that's the way life is. You know, it's a very serious one moment, be very funny the next, and that's so you never lose your sense of humour, because then that gives you perspective that means you don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah, no, I really love that. Three books. If listeners had to get a hold of three books,
oh, there's not three, mate. It's very hard. It's really funny because it's not.
It's because
they're not sports books. There's a really interesting one for me is The Big Mo, and it's by Mark Roeder, and Big Mo is a sports term for momentum, and he talks, this is all big picture stuff, this talks about how the world is run by momentum, and I won't get, that's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
One that fascinates me is The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doig, Doidge, it's Dodge with an I in it. I found that fascinating because a lot of people, and it really resonated with me as a sports person, how you can change your thinking.
Yes.
And he says how physiologically, not psychologically, but physiologically, the brain can change.
Yes.
What makes us tick is the 10 desires that drive us, which comes from Hugh McKay, and that's one of a lot of people. I still think To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee just gave me, years ago, but gave me a concept of natural justice.
Yep.
And Catch 22. When I read Catch 22 by Joseph Heller is out of the 60s, and I won't go into the Catch 22 part, but it's just, it's a real interesting one on how systems can be self-defeating, and it's got nothing to do with sport, but it's got to do again with how, because sometimes we make systems both in sport and business that aren't conducive to improvement.
Yeah.
But we have to have a system.
Yeah.
And Catch 22 as a whole, it's about war, but it's about a Catch 22, a clause about surviving in war, and it's just fascinating. And always stuck with me, so because I understand that the system's not more important than people it's supposed to serve. Mm. And so any system you have in your organisation, or you have in your in your team or your sport, the system's got to be conducive to improvement, not just the system there because we've got a system.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we get clouded by that, we've got this system, so we have to use it. Hang on, is it the right, again, that analysis, that review, is this the best? In other words, that come back to that question, which you always have to ask, is this the best way we can do it?
Yeah.
And that's not in a rebellious way, that's an honest way. Is this the best? If it is, great, let's keep doing it. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't look at it every now and then and see, can we tweak it? Can we improve it? Because that's what you do in sport all the time. You're always seeing, how can we improve? How can we be better?
Yeah.
And if you have that in the back of your mind when you're analysing things, you actually have a better way of analysing them, I think.
Yeah, sure.
I think I've just gone far too cerebral there.
No, that's very good. For people listening to this, if they wanted to contact you in regards to getting you to come in, maybe do some
how
they contact you?
Very easy, mate. SimonMadden.com.au. Everybody should have their own website.
Yep.
They've got a. It's about you. It's about you. The Oscar. It's about you for your review and yes. Another. But if you look up SimonMadden.com.au, there's an avenue to email me, and I get them.
Fantastic.
Or if you want, my email address is simonmadden@winning.com.
Yep.
And I'm not with Charlie Sheen. Winning.com's a whole lot. But that's simonmadden@winning.com, it's winning.com. But the easiest way is simonmadden.com.au, and you'll from there you'll be able to. And I do a whole lot of leadership development, team development, cultural improvement, which scares people, but that's a whole lot of area about improving your people. Because I honestly believe if you improve your people, you improve your business.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, and then for the business people, that actually shows in your bottom line,
yeah.
Which is always a measurement. But if you get, and there's a whole lot of research to show that you get motivated, happy people, and that doesn't mean soft happy. It means you still got to push them and drive them in the right way. You get people who do that, you'll get a better organisation. That's what I believe in, and that's what I work on.
Final question: what's your definition of greatness?
Oh, geez, there's a big question to finish with. Doing what you love. There's the French have a term, raison d'être, reason to be. And the Japanese have a term, ikigai, I-K-I-G-A-I, and I'll spell it wrong, but that is the reason to get up in the morning. Success or greatness, if you can do what you really want to do, day in, day out, and get paid for it,
yep.
and help improve the world while you're doing it, well, who could ask for better than that?
Yeah.
And it's not always about them. Of course, money's important, because ask anybody who hasn't got it, they'll tell you it's important. But there's a lot of people, a lot of money, and still aren't fulfilled.
Yes.
But if you can do something you love and you're passionate about, and you help people and get paid while you do it, and that's really good, and that's why I do what I do.
Fantastic. Well, Simon, I really want to thank you for coming on the show.
That's all right, no worries. Thanks for those very in-depth questions.
That was fantastic. I'm really sure listeners got a lot out of this. I really want to acknowledge you for the work you're doing, and obviously your amazing football career. And I really hope you continue doing the stuff, because obviously a lot of people are benefiting from that, and I really appreciate that.
Now, good on you, James. Thanks very much. I appreciate your time, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. Episode 30 with Simon Madden. Isn't he an absolute star and legend of AFL, legend person to speak with? And I really want to thank him for coming on the show. That was awesome. I hope you guys got a heap out of it. I know I did, and there's going to be plenty of things that I'm going to implement into my own daily routine to help model off him, model off his success, and help my own games. I really hope you guys do the same, and really, whether you're in football, whether you're in business, whether you're just another different athlete or in school and studying, there's so much to take away from a guy who achieves so much. So make sure you definitely take action, put a couple of things straight away into practice, and really reap the rewards as the weeks and months tick on by. So guys, hope you really enjoyed that one. I really appreciate it. If any of you guys, jump on to iTunes, give us a review, give us a rating for this episode and the whole show. It really helps us out to get guys like Simon on the show. And obviously, really thanks to you guys for sharing this and passing on to your Facebooks and Twitters and Instagrams and so forth, because these episodes are made for you guys to help you take you to the next level and really achieve some amazing things. And super exciting to celebrate 30 episodes, which has gone by pretty quick. And next week, we've got another amazing guest on the show. You're going to definitely keep your ears out for that one coming up early next week, because absolute superstar. So thanks, guys. Have a great week. Take some action. Get after it. Really excited for you. Put a smile on your face and enjoy last week of October here, and we'll get stuck in the later part of the year. So enjoy.